Continuing with our reflections and practice today of the Dharma. Sometimes, as has been said, that it's hard to say everything at one time. So we've been laying out in progression different practices and contemplations each day, starting with the breath and the gathering and the samadhi, and then introducing more inquiry. And, it sounds like one goes from A to B to Z. But in fact, in reality, it's more rather than a progression. It's more like a hologram. It's like all these aspects are always present. All aspects of the teaching and the path, realizations, instructions, they're all really present. It's not that they appear and disappear one in a neat succession. And so we've been looking at wisdom and samadhi, and it sounds, in some ways it can sound like we haven't really got much compassion in the teachings or in the practice, devoid of compassion. But it's not that it's not present, but we can only really lay out one thing at a time. In fact, the very practice of being patient and gathering, making a relationship and connection with our being, with our body and mind, with states of mind that we usually ignore, is in and of itself a compassionate activity. It's developing the root of compassion and kindness. Without the ability to really listen and to be patient and to receive, then it's very hard to cultivate compassion. There's a wonderful Indian saint, Sri Nisargadatta. I don't know if you've come across his teachings, and they're very worth investigating. He was a simple shopkeeper in Bombay. He made, among other things he made and sold bidis, these little Indian cigarettes, which perhaps wasn't totally right livelihood, but but he was seemed very realized. And he didn't actually write anything down or teach formally, but people would just gather around him and converse and ask questions, and he would respond from quite a realized position or place. And so in his teachings, recorded in a book called I Am That, are very enlightening. Actually, it's one of those timeless books that you can hang out with and open at any page, and it awakens one. So it's something you might like to check out yourselves if you haven't come across his teachings. One of the things that he used to say is that wisdom, the activity of wisdom, says I am nothing, no thing, while compassion says I am everything. And between these two banks, between these two understandings or insights, the life of a practitioner flows. Seemingly opposite, contradictory statements both have truth. And both, in a way, are interconnected. That the wisdom practice of the path that the Buddha laid down leads to the freeing insight into not having to identify with the changing world as a permanent separate self, not having to squeeze the sense of who we are into a mood. Today I'm very sad, and that's who I am. But it, in a way, when we inquire a little bit further, we can see how contradictory it is, because the next moment we're very happy. So which is the true self? Ought to not squeeze our sense of self into to a worry or an activity or a sense of failure, a sense of success? Are we constantly trying to locate this sense of self and shape it around what we've done, our memories, where we're going, our names, our family identity, our moods, the perceptions and memories we have? It's a very fraught experience, a very unstable experience as we've been looking at. So wisdom, finally, when we get exhausted enough and fraught enough, trying to constantly create a sense of stability for the I, for the me, a sense of continuity in time and space, which of course is always threatened because there's always change and then ultimately there's death. So it's a very fragile, fearful experience trying to locate and substantiate sense of me as an individual, and of course it's always threatened because it's separate. There's me in here and there's the rest of the world out there, which some moments may be nice and pleasant to me, and other moments it's more often than not it's challenging and threatening to me. So we're often in a state of defensiveness and fear, anxiety, trying to protect and defend. So finally, wisdom, when we get tired enough and the experience, whole experience gets fraught enough for us to inquire a little more, then wisdom says, well, actually, you didn't really get the whole picture. You've made assumptions that aren't true. Let's look at the assumptions that we've made about who I am and my sense of identity. So this activity of inquiry leading to the insight, which we can call wisdom, the insight that we don't have to grasp or own the changing world or the changing identities or the changing moods or even more subtly the changing thoughts. We don't have to grasp and own them and hold tightly. We can allow them to flow and to be reflective, but we begin to find an abiding, as Kirisawa was saying, that's more rooted in awareness, in presence, in that which is unchanging. So this begins to give us a sense of relief, a sense of space. Perhaps before we haven't really experienced, we begin to feel there's a spaciousness. It's not so, and in that space, it's a feeling of peacefulness, maybe not so fraught, not so fearful. So in this wisdom aspect that we've been emphasizing, the wisdom says I'm no thing. It's not a negation of self. Sometimes we get the understanding it means that we have to somehow take that as a dogma almost. There isn't a self. I remember arriving once at a retreat center and we were having a discussion, group of us, and someone's name came up, and I said, oh yeah, that person to me seems like an old soul. It's just a way of speaking, just feeling that they had a lot of maturity. And this person, this very fundamentalist Buddhist, started to attack me. What do you mean, soul? There isn't a soul. There's no self. What are you talking about? And so I said, well, it's actually just a manner of speaking. We don't have to get too intense about it, too hooked up on the language. So we get sometimes this idea of no self is a negation, and then we struggle to try and eradicate the sense of self, which is obviously there. There is a sense of self, but it's more a sense what's let go of or what's seen into is the ignorance or the ignorant relationship. So the sense of self can arise when it's appropriate and dissolve again. But it's not fixed as a permanent identity. When one's teaching, for example, there's a certain sense of self that arises, connecting with an activity. But it's not a permanent identity. It arises, a function happens, speaking has to happen, listening happens, rather than being strongly identify me as the teacher, you as the listeners, and can lessen that, soften around that, and there's an exchange, there's a process and the flow, and then when it dissolves, I don't have to walk around all day being the teacher and the wise one, hopefully not. It's a burden. I can let it dissolve and rest more in just being. And perhaps then the next activity of cooking or managing, mothering, whatever it is that we're doing, there's an appropriate response, it's an appropriate shape to be in. But what happens with this emptying of self is we lose the rigidity, we start to lose the intensity and the rigidity and the having to carry it around the whole day. We don't have to be a mother the whole day. We can sometimes, mothering happens and then we can let it go and return to our own being. It's also a relief for everyone else, not only ourselves. So this emptying, so that it's not so much a negating of self, but an emptying of the compulsion, an emptying of the rigid identification and ownership, an emptying of the ignorance around the nature of a conditioned, temporary, relative sense of self that's appropriate for whatever's, for the relationship that's present now. So when we practice this, wisdom says, I am nothing, rather than trying to intellectualize, Ajahn tries to say, well, you know, if you try and think about no self, you just go mad. It's not you can't think your way to the understanding of it. What we can do is actually see thought as something that's changing, and then allowing thought to take us, as Kitty Sarah was saying, the ending of the thought to take us back to presence. So a way, an entry point into this insight is just being able to see seeing the ending of things rather than jumping to the next thing. It's the ending of a breath. The ending of a thought. So there's this patience. Usually when something ends, we get agitated. Space, like in a retreat space, we're in a way allowing a lot of things to, we're not picking up things, so there's a lot of, in a way, dying away of our everyday activity. We get agitated, we're not patient with space. We want to get into the next thing because the lack of definition that we get from what we do and from our activity is uncomfortable for us. So we just have to be patient, just to allow maybe the ending and noticing. Allowing ourselves to notice the space that's here, rather than being so drawn to intensity, to our problems, our suffering, our internal worlds, just being able to notice the spaciousness. These kind of things help with emptying, this feeling of emptying. So to liberate the heart and the mind in a way is to empty it, to allow it things to cease, to settle, to bear with the agitation when we want to do something, get going, the compulsiveness, not to necessarily always have to act on that, to allow it to pass. Not to have to establish our sense of who we are and what we do. Getting a feeling for the spaciousness, the peacefulness of heart. When there's a lot of thinking, another way that we can enter this spacious abiding, the thing that trips us up the most is our thoughts, thinking mind, the busy dwelling on what's happened, conversations, what we've done, who we are through what we've done, accumulated our identities and roles in our life, busy thinking about what we need to do and solve, solve things, where we're going. So we can just gently ask, well, who is this that's thinking? Who is this? Who is this that's trying to get somewhere? Who is this that feels a failure? Who is this that's successful? So it's just this little question in the mind when we're busy in the middle of a plan, busy dreaming up the next project. We can, and that just that simple question, who, deflates the intensity, deflates the power of this case I was calling about becoming, taking birth, being shaped by the thoughts and the volition and the movement into the next thing. So this who deflates and allows us to come back to here and now. Here and now, maybe it's nothing much, but can we attune the attention to that which is actually peaceful here and now, spacious, present? So it's a subtle attunement, really, of the attention, away from the addiction of becoming the next thing, thinking and cogitating. So this emptying, and interestingly enough, that the emptying of the self, the intensity, is very much connected with compassion. That cohesive element which allows us to feel our connectedness with the whole. Sometimes when we think about in Buddhism, when they talk about emptiness or non-self, it sounds like it's taking you to a very, it can sound like it's taking one to a very arid place, isolated place. It's all empty. When I first used to hear that, it felt quite cool and cold and devoid of humanity. But in fact, the reality of, as we start to dissolve some of the separative tendencies that we have, that we hold in our consciousness, in our minds, me here and you out there, very strong sense of separation. And in between that separation, there's all sorts of dynamics, wanting closeness, fearing contact. When we start to empty those more, then what we can actually begin to feel is the unlimited nature of mind that is part of the whole, is the whole, is connected, interconnected. So lessening the strong sense of separation between me and here and the world out there, which is threatening to me or attractive to me. So the compassion says, I am everything, is allowing, can we contemplate in a way that allows us to soften the abiding of spaciousness, so it's not a cold, removed, paranoid, isolated space that we find ourselves in. Sometimes meditators can get very, very strong sense of division between my meditative space and then the world out there, which is somehow a little suspicious and bad, and we need to be careful of it. So we land up in a very split and divided space. And for many of us, I think on the meditative path, we go through that kind of experience. But at the root of our practice, can we actually counteract that by allowing a more conscious sense of our interconnectedness, which is actually the reality, that we're not, the sense of self is a flow of interconnected process rather than this solid, separate chunk moving through life. It's all dependent and connected with the totality. Separation is really what diminishes our compassion, strong sense of me here and you there. I mean, we might think we have compassion, but really it's maybe pity or patronization or me wanting to help you, not necessarily from a place of connectedness and empathy, but more from a place of that's sense of separateness from trying to make everything out there all right so that I feel more comfortable. So compassion, it's not, I think it's not an easy word, it's not an easy thing to really to contemplate, but an important. Without compassion, obviously the human life is horrendous. It's just about competition, struggle. I notice in South Africa, for example, with the history of separateness, apartheid literally means separate. Of colonization and separateness, that it's very hard to practice compassion there, to feel compassion, because the force of that which constantly separates out, and the gulf between us and them is not a gulf filled with mutual love and care, it's a gulf filled with fear and hatred and suspicion. And every way that languages and perceptual framework is held reinforces the sense of separateness. It reinforces that them out there, i.e. if you're white, it's the blacks and vice versa, are threatening to us. Not to be trusted. To be feared. To be dominated. So it's a very hard atmosphere to soften in. You want to be soft or gentle, and where we are, local farmers, because we're in a rural community, we're saying, no, but you don't understand. You've got to be hard. If you're not hard, they take advantage of you. So you find that people have become very hard-hearted. This feeling of, you know, if I soften a little bit, I'm going to be run over. And there's a lot of I can understand how that position has been arrived at. Every murder, every violation reinforces this position. But I can see for oneself that I've always thought the day I land up in that place as a strategy in life is the day I have to leave South Africa. because it's what it does to one's own being is so violent, never mind everyone else. So it's not an easy atmosphere, and it's been very challenging to actually consider what is compassion in that kind of an atmosphere. You see that for many whites live in these lagers, these sort of compounds. When we first went there, we didn't really know that that's how you protected yourself. You live in a compound. A city or in a high ward in Johannesburg, gates locked, security, armed guards. And so it doesn't touch you. You know, the suffering, the poverty, the anger doesn't touch you. You feel removed. When we first came there, we didn't actually understand that that's mostly how people land up living, because it's too much to handle the situation. We found ourselves very raw and very open living in the rural situation, and then all the dynamics that come up. When you just arrive with a white face, you're automatically pigeonholed. Your inner being, it doesn't necessarily figure on the barometer at all. It's you're white, and therefore this is the perceptions that others have around you. If you're with another white, you're an ally. If you're black, then maybe you're a boss, or you're seen with suspicion, or maybe someone to all the conditioning in each moment is right there. So all of these conditionings continually create a sense of separateness and force one into a sort of inner shaping, inner kind of shape. And I realized after being there for a while that I don't like that the shape that one's forced into, because fundamentally it's a hardening of the heart. And the views that keep supporting that hardening. So it is, and I think more and more, I'm sure you can relate to some of this in the present day situation here, and more globally these ways that we separate out and defend and close ourselves off. When there's fear, when there's threat, then we move out of the heart, the place where we feel our connectedness with the whole, and we move into our heads, and we judge and we think, and we use the power of our brain and the enormous power that we have to defend ourselves against them out there that are going to attack. So living in an increasingly polarized world with us and them is not very conducive to compassion, that's for sure. It's very good for war. Basically, it's hard to have when you're at war, the compassion is very hard for that to be there. Because the whole thing of war, you have to have another. And they have to be demonized and dehumanized. So how does one practice in these kind of atmospheres? How, you know, it's all very understandable how one gets into a rigid place. It's all very understandable how one can get into a judging place. It can be very reinforced by all the actions one sees around one. But for me, the question has been more like, how can I stay in this kind of situation, seeing the places in me that tense up, that get angry, that get hard, that get threatened, that get fearful? How can I acknowledge those places? And perhaps I don't have compassion. Maybe I can feel, actually, I don't have compassion. And to maybe be compassionate to that. Can I actually hear that? I don't have compassion. Fear, there's fear there. So seeing those places, and actually seeing compassion is not necessarily always about having to love everyone. That's quite a high demand. Maybe it's possible for some of us some of the time, but maybe being able to have compassion for those places that we experience that are within us that constrict, that become hard, that become fearful. Can we receive those with softness, with awareness, with mindfulness? So the challenge, how to be in situations where, that I'm talking about more extreme, but even subtle ways where this is separativeness and we move into the paranoia and fear, can we first of all say in the space of this retreat, where we're not challenged with all the dynamics of the society in our face, can we actually learn in very gentle and small ways to soften and to receive those places in ourselves that don't feel compassionate, that feel defended, that feel hard, that feel angry or irritated or suspicious, paranoid? Can we allow a space for that? Can we soften with that? Can we hear? Talking about this listening as an aspect of mindfulness. Mindfulness isn't just a cold, calculating observation, but it's also dynamic, alive connectedness with how it is in this moment. Part of that is the ability, not only as we've talked about, to direct the attention, the mindfulness to this moment, but to receive, and part of the receiving, to listen into the heart, to listen into the parts of our being that feel untouched by warmth or by softness or by receptivity, unlistened to, unheard. So compassion, in a way, to feel with, to the root of it, to actually resonate with, to feel with, particularly those places of suffering. Not to judge them. Usually when we're threatened, we don't want to feel it, when we move up into the head and judge it, like it, don't like it, should or shouldn't be. That's a capacity that's very well developed. We all know how we should be, how life should be, how they should be, how I should be, how my wife should be, how my husband should be. So we should on life a lot. Meeting life with the shoulds. shouldn't be so distracted, shouldn't be so this way, shouldn't be that way. So we don't really have a direct relationship, we're just constantly projecting should or shouldn't be. So this compassion is more this compassion says I'm everything, is like more and more being able to just receive how it is, without the shoulding, without the judging, being able to receive, this is how it is. I don't like it, maybe. I don't like that there's wars. I don't like that there's fear. I don't like acts of violence. But can I actually connect, feel what it is? Can I feel what it is? Just allow myself without necessarily having to like or dislike or judge or get into a strategy. Can we just feel ourselves as well? So this place where compassion and wisdom begin to merge. In our practice today, beginning to allow these two main streams of the awakened heart, the wise heart that can notice where there's grasping in the mind, where there's aversion in the mind, allow them to be emptier, emptying out of the grasping aversion through patience, through noticing the spaciousness of the heart that's just present. To really stay with that. If we start to get lost, then remembering we have these foundation practices of samatha, of just samadhi, of just being with breath and body as a way of just grounding us. Sometimes we can get lost in some real complex debates about the way the world is and how to solve it and what needs to happen. Can get really heady and fired up and strong feelings. What we can do in this moment, know if we come into our breath, come into our body, touch with something that's tangible here and now, and that the best response we're ever going to be able to make in life is a place from emptying rather than from a place of fullness. To trust that we can actually let go, to trust this activity of being able to release, to let go, and in letting go to receive, to be able to receive all the different feelings and moods, and when we feel ourselves rather than the constricting into the sense of self and defending, but being able to feel the self, allowing that to expand out. The awareness that gathers in all the whole trees, the birds, the earth, soldiers on the hill, people driving to work, family, the us and them in life, the whole totality. Can we hear that? Can we be with that? Can we feel it when it enters our consciousness, touches our consciousness, without going into a storyline? Just being able to feel, to breathe with. Very simply listening into whatever comes our way, just being able to listen to the quality of the mood, the heart, and softening. So this word, compassion, karuna, metta, part of metta from the Sanskrit maitri, means to soften, to keep the body and heart soft. Just that we tend to tense up, and particularly when we're very concentrated on my samadhi, can we just open the eyes, just soften the eyes, soften the gaze, soften the shoulders, the jaw, the belly. And the places that we feel in ourselves where there is rigidity, fear, here. I don't have any love. Can we hear those voices? I don't want to be compassionate. I'm quite happy in my castle. The world can buzz off. I don't want to know. Can we hear those come up for all of us sometimes? Can we hear those voices, have softness and compassion for those voices in the heart? I don't know what to do. Some feeling I have to know what to do every moment to be effective, to be strong, to be confident. So a lot of us, a lot of the time, we don't know. Can we receive that? I should know, I should have an answer. Can we just receive and soften around that, around our bodies? A lot of us have a lot of difficulty accepting our bodies. It's too fat, too thin, too old, I don't know about too young. I don't quite like the way my nose is, or I wish I had slightly different hair, or I don't like the pains, or it was different. So we have this constant message we give to our bodies, you should be different. Which is a hard thing when the body's just following its own course, aging, doing its thing, and we projecting onto it. Yeah, it's not right. So can we soften with the body, our body, be kind, feel it, allow it some empathy. Listening into the body. So today, extending this to jhana factors that we started the retreat with, the vitakka, the inquiry, to keep noticing, grasping, to let go, and then the vichara, the receiving, to extend that, to receive, to allow things. One of our teachers translated metta as allowing all things to exist as they are, without the judgment, without the shoulds, allowing all things to rest as they are, whether we like it or not, allowing all things in the universe to be as they are in this moment. So there's not this demand, it should be different, there's not this contention, it's not this aggravation. Seeing if we can have moments of just allowing body, heart, the mind, the world, and all its craziness, its insanity, and its hardness. We can all agree that we don't approve of some of it, but however, just to soften, just to allow it to be as it is, for the sake of just receiving and listening and empathizing this feeling, may all beings, whether we like them or not, wherever they are, may their hearts be at ease. This is the core, the heart of compassion, wishing the welfare for others, wishing them freedom from suffering. Today we're not sitting in a small group,